cell phone, I would ask that you make sure you turn it off so that it's not interrupting the proceedings. And also, in this committee, we have a couple of mascots. They're called Rosie and Rosettes, and you see them up there in front. And they're there for a purpose, trying to discourage the use of acronyms, the alphabet soup. And so when you slip and do so, we ask that you make a contribution to Rosie or Rosette. And at the end of session, the amount that is collected in the pigs will go to the Oregon Food Bank. So with that, we will begin testimony on House Bill 2156. And I think Ed Johnston, Rick Mills, and Ken Ryder.
Yeah, it's good.
Ed, you're looking a little better today. What's happening?
Oh, I wouldn't say any better. I don't.
Well, you are. You know, you got your neck cracked.
Yeah, well, that helps. Yeah, another disc going in my spinal cord, and I'm looking at probably another surgery. It's very interesting how this is going on. Anyhow, dealing with House Bill 2156, dealing with the cross and the title transfers concern me, and I would imagine a lot of Oregon residents. Because we want to make sure that if something like this does happen, what is the Oregon residents going to actually get out of something like this compared to losing? The agencies are always winning, and the public is always losing. And it's very distraught that the agencies and Department of Human Resources say they're out to help the public, when I have been able to prove without a shadow of a doubt, even in my own personal case, that is not a true statement. I am a disabled worker and fighting disability, and this brings me up another caution or red flag that... this will be personal sales that would happen. Money would be unaccounted for. And I think that anything like this goes, there ought to be an amendment to this bill stating that there should be accountability. And if there isn't accountability and money is misplaced, there ought to be indictments following that to know where the money is. Thank you.
Thank you. And I hope your surgery is successful.
Well, it's interesting. I got spinal cord damage, nerve damage, and they gave me the opportunity of 10%. So...
Well, let's hope for the best. Thanks. Rick Mills and Ken Ryder.
Thank you, Chair Winters, members of the committee. My name is Rick Mills. I'm with the Department of Human Services, and we're here to request your support for HB 2156, which is submitted on behalf of the Department of Human Services. Trying to keep this as simple as possible, what this legislation would do, it would allow the Department of Human Services to record a document with the county clerk's office requesting notification whenever a client of ours is about to transfer property, sell property, or have a mortgage against that property. All that would be a notice sent to us by a title company. And the reason we're asking for this is because we have two situations which occur. The first situation is unfortunately, some of our elderly and disabled clients are victims of financial abuse. And sometimes we don't find out about this sort of abuse for years. We are hoping that by getting a notice of a transaction of this nature, that then our case managers and, if necessary, our adult protective services workers would get more timely notice of what's going on, and then they can look into it to see whether or not there might be some sort of financial abuse occurring of one of our clients. And certainly timely response to that sort of activity is very critical in successful prosecution of criminal indictments, and also increases the possibility of our being able to undo or minimize any sort of financial damages that might be suffered by the client. The second component of this is whenever there's a major change in financial status for one of our clients, they have an affirmative duty to notify their case manager so that it can be evaluated to determine whether it affects their ongoing eligibility for public assistance. Unfortunately, in our experience, in many instances, clients either intentionally or unintentionally do not notify their case manager when they engage in one of these kinds of transactions involving their real property. And we may not find out about it for months. In some cases, we won't even learn about it until after the client has died. At that point in time, of course, it's very difficult for us to take any sort of remedial steps. Now, just to kind of give you an illustration of what I'm talking about, let's assume that we've got John Smith, who owns some real property, and he's a public assistance recipient. For whatever reason, just picking numbers arbitrarily, say he's got $30,000 worth of deferred real property taxes through the elderly tax deferral program, and he goes to the bank and he gets an $85,000 equity loan against the real property. Well, under certain circumstances, that would probably end up making him over-resourced and not eligible to continue to receive assistance. However, if he fails to notify us for whatever reason, we may not discover it for many, many months, and he will continue to receive public assistance during that intervening time. Also, during that intervening time, our experience is that money that he may have gotten from the loan sort of disappears, and it's very difficult to account for it. That's particularly true in cases where we don't discover these kind of transactions until after the client has passed away, and of course the person who has the information is no longer here. And it's very difficult, even if we can trace those proceeds, to get them back at that point in time. So in very simple terms, that's the kind of thing that we're trying to address here. Now, I need to emphasize that this is a request for notice. It's not a lien on the property. The client is still free to sell their property, borrow money against the property, and so forth. All it does is it requires the title company to let us know that the transaction has occurred so that we can evaluate it, determine whether it affects our client's eligibility or whether our client may be the victim of some sort of financial exploitation by an unscrupulous individual. We worked very closely with the Oregon Land Title Association in drafting this legislation, and they are on record with Chair Williams and the House Judiciary Committee as having no objection to the bill as it is currently drafted. So I think that in a very quick nutshell is what we're trying to do here and what this bill is about, and I'm certainly willing to try to answer any questions that the committee may have. Thank you.
Rick, how many individuals do you think that you will need to, that would be involved in this particular situation?
Chair Winters, are you asking how many of these notices we're going to be filing?
Yes.
To be real candid with you, I can't say for sure because I don't know how many of our clients have real property at this time. What happens is when a client comes on assistance, they go through the resource assessment, and the case manager is supposed to notify the estate administration unit of any clients that own real property. When we would get that notice at the estate administration unit, that is the time when the request for notice would be filed. Right now I don't have any statistics with me that tell you how many of our clients are on record as having real property.
What was the basis then of the special payments calculation, and how were you able to arrive at that figure?
What we did there was, Chair Winters, our problem here is, admittedly, it's very difficult for us to project what sort of revenue enhancement or savings we're going to derive from this because there is very little data from which we can extrapolate. However, what we did was we used the assumption that we would catch, what we based our assumption on was that we anticipate catching approximately 3 cases per month at $10,000 at the estate administration unit. And using those assumptions is where that figure comes from. That was just based upon the experience of our estate administrators, that we have 5 estate administrators at the estate administration unit, and based upon their experience, we felt that that was a reasonable but conservative estimate. It's very difficult for us to project this with any precision, though.
Question?
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Winters. Would title companies or any other private entity that's providing the notification to the Department of Human Services, would they be compensated for the expense of their time, postage, and mailing?
Chair Winters, Representative Smith, there's no provision in the bill for paying title companies for performing this service. I would note, however, that this really shouldn't add significantly to the amount of work that they already perform regularly on any sort of land sale transaction. You have to understand that when a transaction which is insured by a title company occurs, the fee which is charged is based upon the amount of the insurance, regardless of the amount of work that's involved for the title company. In other words, the person that pays the insurance premium on the title insurance, it's the same for them, regardless of whether there's 100 liens on the property or no liens on the property. And all that this would require is that during the title company's normal review of the title records, it'd just be one more line item on their title report, and admittedly they would have to incur some additional expense in printing up a piece of paper and putting it in an envelope and mailing it to us.
Follow up. What's the potential exposure to a title company should they fail to correctly position the lien?
Chair Winters, Representative Smith, again, to emphasize, there is no lien.
Can you rephrase my question, please? Thank you, Chair. What is the exposure to a title company should they fail inadvertently to post any transaction or to report to the Department of Human Services?
Chair Winters, Representative Smith, the only thing the bill requires is that they send notice. There is no provision in the bill for penalizing a title company in any fashion if they fail to forward to us a notice. I am not aware of any sort of civil exposure that the title companies would face arising from this legislation. And as I said earlier, we work very closely with the Oregon Land Title Association and their representatives, and they're comfortable with the bill, so I assume that they also do not perceive this as creating any sort of civil exposure for them.
This was a bill that was in Judiciary?
Chair Winters, yes. This bill was heard by the House Judiciary Committee three times, and was finally passed out with a due pass recommendation, at which point it came to this committee.
It's because of the fiscal limit.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Ryder.
Chair Winters, I was only here to answer any questions that Mr. Mills couldn't handle, but he apparently did an admirable job.
Oh, well. Are there any questions of either Mr. Mills or Mr. Ryder? And I want to note for the record they didn't have any acronyms either.
That's too bad.
I could come up with one real quick if it would.
Rosie needs all the help she can get just to feed her baby.
I'd be willing to put one in anyway.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. So she made me the proprietor of the money.
Oh, you're the keeper of the purse, so to speak.
That's right. That's right.
Tell you what. I'll put some in advance just in case I. What's the going rate?
She doesn't like change.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You asked for that.
I did, and unfortunately, I'm embarrassed to admit I don't have any currency in my pocket at the moment. There is a budget problem at my department.
You asked for that one.
I have to give you an IOU.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing, and I'm going to open a work session on 2156.
Thank you, Chair Winters.
Madam Chair, just in looking at the cost associated with this, it appears that it certainly is leveled off by the revenues, and so don't see where it would cost anything. So I'm comfortable with it.
Ms. Baker.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would call your attention to the fiscal that we've provided to you. It does anticipate a $280,000 general fund savings in the department's budget. The governor's budget does have a package. You'll see it in the senior and people with disabilities budget. But the number in the governor's budget is considerably lower than this. So if this bill is moving forward and it looks like it will pass, then when we get to the senior and people with disabilities budget, the analyst would adjust that package to reflect this updated estimate.
I'm prepared to give you a motion at the appropriate time.
Okay.
We will be at ease for about as long as it can take the fifth representative to go into LFO.
Comfortable. I want to ensure that our title companies are not in any way put in a position of being penalized should they fail to improperly or inadequately inform the department. Can you help give me reassurance on that?
Chair Winters, Representative Smith. First of all, as I noted earlier, the bill contains absolutely no penalties whatsoever within the language itself regarding failure to give us notice. So then that pretty well eliminates that component of it. I cannot foresee a circumstance where, a title company's, innocent inadvertence failing to notify us of a transaction is going to result or be able to create a cause of action for us in a tort situation in a court of law. I certainly don't anticipate it. Well, let me put it this way. That's certainly not our plan to try to pursue a claim against them for failure to give us notice. I'm not sure how we could make a successful claim against them if they did fail to give us notice, because the transaction itself, we can't prevent the transaction. It's going to occur whether or not they give us notice, and we can't block that. And we don't find out about the transaction until after it occurs. So what we would be doing is, if there was something that needed to be done against, say, somebody who financially exploited the client, our remedy, if anything, is going to be have somebody go after that individual. I don't know what more I can tell you to reassure you that I cannot conceive of a scenario where that's going to create liability for the title companies. And again, I would emphasize, like I said, we've worked, Mr. Ryder actually spent a great deal of time working with Cleve Abbey of the Oregon Land Title Association. He's also legal counsel for one of the title companies here in Oregon. And they discussed, many, many issues, and this was certainly one that they didn't seem to have any concerns about, because they didn't raise it with us.
one last question. Thank you. I appreciate your response on that. What do you anticipate the expense, the financial expense, being to a title insurance company to adhere to this request? Because really, as I understand it, this is purely a request. If there's no mechanism in place to hold the title company accountable for not providing the information.
Chair Winters, Representative Smith. Like I say, whenever a title company does a title search, they have to go through their records and do all that searching. Mm-hmm. So that all that's going to be added to that burden from their perspective is there's just one little additional line item which they're going to have to add to their title report.
And again, just one more time, how many transactions do you anticipate that being statewide on perhaps a monthly basis?
Chair Winters, Representative Smith, I doubt that we're going to have more than, you know, a dozen sort of transactions at the most in a month, because you have to remember, first of all, the number of people that are receiving public assistance is, I believe, somewhere around 40,000. I could be wrong on that, but it's not a very large number. Then of the percentage of those people who actually own real property is going to be commensurately smaller. Then the number of those people that in any particular month are going to have some sort of transaction involving their real property is going to be that much, again, even smaller. So I do not anticipate a great number of these cases occurring in a particular month.
Thank you.
I would certainly expect it to be, like I say, you know, maybe a dozen at most.
Let me see if I understand this, and I'll then you for Senator Morris, that one, the Oregon Land Title Association worked with you on this particular bill, and this bill has gone through the House Judiciary Committee and has come out and then come down to us. Is that correct?
Chair Winters, that is correct.
And that the intent of the legislation is to do two things. One is to get at some exploitation, particularly of seniors and seniors and that population who are very vulnerable to people exploiting their funds, and this is one way of through transactions to be able to get some handle on that particular issue.
Chair Winters, that is correct. We are hoping that this will be one tool that will help us in that regard.
And the other piece is those individuals who have transactions and who actually owe the state dollars, and it's a way of getting at that piece.
Chair Winters, more accurately stated, we expect that this would mean that those people who should no longer be receiving assistance, we would be able to act more timely. So we would be discontinuing payments on their behalf in a more timely fashion.
And the amount that you're expecting of that particular dollar would be somewhere a $280,190 that would go into the general fund.
Chair Winters, that is what we expect as far as revenue enhancement. What is not in the fiscal is, as I said, it's very difficult for us to make some projections, and we've had some assumptions where we could project out savings to the department approaching $2.4 million from this.
Thank you.
But it's based on assumptions.
Senator Morris, do you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just so I understand more clearly, you do not file any kind of security interest.
Chair Winters, Senator Morris, no, this is not any sort of lien or encumbrance on the property. All it is a document that says when some sort of transaction occurs that a title company is to let us know.
Follow up. Did you give consideration to following the normal pattern that the private sector would use? In the event, by statute, you do have a security interest in that real property.
Chair Winters, Senator Morris, no, we do not have any sort of lien or encumbrance on the real property. Federal law does allow us under certain circumstances to the state, or I should say the federal law does allow the state the option of having what are known as TEFRA liens under very certain specific circumstances. However, the state of Oregon has not elected to take advantage of that, and it would require legislative action for us to have that authority.
But you follow up, Ian? Thank you. But you do have the right at the point of sale of that property to collect reimbursement.
Chair Winters, Senator Morris, no, we do not have the right to demand the proceeds from a sale for reimbursement. Some people
elect rather than go off assistance to reimburse us voluntarily. What happens is if they accumulate resources in excess of $2,000, they're over-resourced, generally speaking, to continue to receive assistance. So what would happen is when we get notice of this kind of transaction, the case manager would look at it and see whether the person is now over-resourced. If they are over-resourced, then the case manager would initiate the process to terminate their continuing assistance because they're over-resourced. Does that respond, sir?
Thank you.
Senator Carter.
I'd like to move House Bill 3629 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Carter moves House Bill 2156 to full ways and means with the due pass recommendation. Are there any objections? Note that Representative Briggs Smith is an objection. Hearing no further objections, to pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Winters, members of the committee.
House Bill 3629. Thank you very much. Oh, let me see. We're in work session on House Bill 3629 relating to warrants issued by the Department of Human Services. And this was a bill that we had up previously, and we did not work session it, but we did have the public hearing on it last week, wasn't it?
Yes.
So, Ms. Baker.
Madam Chair, I've handed out the response to questions you had last week that was prepared by Mr. Mills on House Bill 3629 and a copy again of the fiscal impact statement on this bill. It is our recommendation that you approve the bill and recommend it to full committee with the due pass recommendation. Again, there are budget adjustments that would be made here at this time in the department-wide support services budget. Those won't be reflected in what you'll see later in this meeting, but by the time we get to final work session, if this bill moves out and looks like it's going to be enacted, then we'll make those adjustments for the final work session.
Is there any questions of Ms. Baker on House Bill 3629, and I take it that you did have time to read the information. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sheila, could you just very simply go through and explain what it costs to collect and what the collections are?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, I guess I would ask the agency to respond to that question.
Go ahead, 8%. Once again, for the record, my name is Rick Mills. I'm with the Department of Human Services. With me is Steve Stover, also of the Overpayment Recovery Unit of Department of Human Services, and I would request Mr. Stover to respond to that question.
Chair Winters, members of the committee, we are currently involved in a Secretary of State audit of our operations, and we had a meeting about a week ago that the state auditors shared the preliminary results of the audit, and what they came up with our cost benefit analysis. Currently, we're collecting about $12 for every dollar in expenses.
Thank you.
Any additional questions?
Madam Chair, I would like to move House Bill 3629 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Carter moves House Bill 3629 to full ways and means with the due pass recommendation. Are there any objections?
No objection.
Then you need to get Bates back.
What's that?
because it kills the bear.
I have a good question.
Certainly.
On your figure, you get you have $12 return for every $1 expended. Can you give me a feel for whether that's good, bad, or indifferent?
We think it's pretty good. The for instance, I was associated with the estate administration unit 2 years ago, and I believe at that time the state administration was collecting about $14 for every dollar expended, and they deal mostly with larger assets when they collect. Essentially, we're collecting from former welfare clients, so the assumption is that it's more difficult because even though a person makes a dollar more than the eligibility level, it doesn't mean that they're, wealthy or able to collect from. So I think the collections are fairly cost-effective in that area, given that we have to work harder to – I believe we have to work not harder, but we have to deal with greater numbers in order to collect that amount.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Chair Winters.
Yes, Representative.
I have trepidation over eliminating the need to obtain a court judgment prior to initiating a wage garnishment. However, in the interest of moving this forward, I'm prepared to give a courtesy vote.
Well, thank you. And I need to wait.
No, we need to wait. Okay.
The work session has Bill 3629, and here is Miss Baker. Is she right behind you?
I didn't see her out there.
We're going to go ahead and take this vote, and she can record it.
Okay.
Madam Chair, reiterating my motion that we move House Bill 3629 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Carter moves House Bill 3629 to full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. All in favor, and are you still?
Do you need me?
No.
I'll be there.
Okay. Record that Representative Greg Smith is a no. With that, passes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Winters.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. You may leave. But thank you for coming back. And we still need to have the staff here. I'm opening House Bill 5030, and you do have that information before you, and I'm certain that Ms. Baker is probably on her way. House Bill 5030 is the Department of Human Services department-wide support services bill, and it will probably take a lot more to walk through this one, and I know that the director, Gene Thorne, is in the audience, and we'll probably, if you have questions, you might as well come up forward, Gene, so just in case.
So you can call others up
in case we need to have them, and just see as I complete it, and Pam is here, so, and see, timely. Ms. Baker is just walking up. Okay.
You can be doing carriage for this.
So I will give you on the House side, you need to give Bates since he was a no. And then on the Senate side, you can spread them between Ms. Senator Clark and Senator Gordon.
And
full of the same.
Mm-hmm.
Since I don't have any other nominees to give to Miller, Miller will carry it. Morris has to do 53rd.
That's right.
He's looking paid.
Oh, excuse me, what?
No, we just did.
We're dividing up the task.
Well, what would you like me to do?
When we get through with it.
1, 2, 3.
Whatever you wish.
Thank you. Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, House Bill 5030, this is the Department of Human Services budget bill. This is our first preliminary work session on a piece of that budget. In terms of process, what will happen is we will go, as we get the various clusters budgets prepared preliminarily prior to final budget decisions being made, we'll bring them in for a work session, work through some of the issues, have discussion on those issues, and then when the complete budget is ready, we would move House Bill 5030 out as a entire package. So this is, again, just a preliminary work session. Want to go over some numbers, some issues, and budget notes in the various agencies as we get them developed.
I might explain that we're doing it this way so that we can somehow keep on schedule and somehow be ready for when it's time to actually do the larger budget so that these pieces have already been addressed. Next week, the same thing will occur on some of the other pieces. I think on Friday we will do, is it Friday? We will.
Tomorrow.
But then pieces of the FEOP, we will do that. We won't have all of it, but we will begin to do things in segments so that we can begin to move this process in, so that we're not here until September.
Praise God for that.
Go ahead, Ms. Baker.
I distributed it to your offices yesterday afternoon, a cover memo that summarized the recommendations to this point, a two-page spreadsheet that shows the budget detail, and then a copy of the department-wide benchmarks and performance measures. So I'll just start working through the memo. The first page is basically a summary of the governor's budget, including the policy packages. So the governor's budget included policy packages for Medicaid Management Information System, and we have recommendations regarding that package. But the other policy packages in the budget we are recommending be approved as they were included in the governor's budget. Package 162 relates to the child support transfer to Department of Justice. That was implemented legislatively in House Bill 2340, and the governor has signed that bill. Package 163 allows for completion of an information system related to the Women, Infant, and Children's Program to meet some federal mandates. and it adds a position for ongoing system administration. Package 164 adds a position related to helping schools claim Medicaid match for allowable services. Right now in the governor's budget, there's an expectation of about $25 million for schools based on that administrative matching money. And the issue here is that without a position to make sure that eligible expenditures are being recorded appropriately and recorded appropriately, we could get in trouble with the feds as a state. And so this would fund that position with a small fee on the matching money from the schools. Package 170 transfers the revenue for the Children Ombudsman to the Department of Human Services from Commission on Children and Families. We talked about this transfer in the Commission on Children and Families budget as well. This is implemented in House Bill 2522, which has passed the House and right now is on the Senate side. So that came through this committee on its travels to the Senate side. Then Package 181 reduced Attorney General expenditures based on what is now House Bill 2342, and that's awaiting the governor's signature. That was an additional estates collection bill that has moved forward. So, again, with the exception of Package 102, the Medicaid Management Information System, we recommend that the budget include all those policy package adjustments. And I'll talk about the Medicaid Management Information System in a minute as we go to the spreadsheet detail. Any questions on those packages? Okay. Top of page 2 on my memo summarizes our vacant position analysis. And I will say that the verbiage here is no way reflective of the time and effort that went into that analysis, both on our side, on the agency side, and Senator Morse and his staff worked on it with us. This particular cluster had 159 unduplicated counted positions that were on the list. 60 of those positions were new in the governor's budget. 58 of those were related to the Medicaid Management Information System. But they're new in the governor's budget, and so the agency couldn't fill them anyway. But the way the report was generated, they were on the list. 38 positions had been filled by the time that we started working on this in April and May. 20 positions had recruitment either planned, that is, an exception to the hiring freeze had been requested, or they were farther along in the recruiting process in some instances to the point of offering people the jobs, which indicated to us that those were positions that were critical, because if they weren't critical, they wouldn't have been exempted from the hiring freeze on the executive branch side. And so we felt that those were reasonable to allow them to maintain those positions. And then there were 6 positions on the vacancy report that the department was planning to eliminate anyway as a result of their reorganization of the Continuous Systems Improvement Unit, which was also a reduction that was reflected in the co-chair's budget. So our recommendation after looking at those and talking back and forth with the agency is that there are 35 positions that could be eliminated out of this budget, and that's a 3.7% reduction from the total position authority that was allowed for in the governor's budget. So 35 out of 945 positions. And the budget adjustment for that we'll go over on the spreadsheet in a minute. Other and federal funds ending balances, we are working and the department is working to try to match up the other and federal funds revenues and their account balances. This, if you'll remember, this exercise was intended to look at what agencies had in the way of account balances and see if any of that money would be available for using in other ways if it wasn't otherwise restricted. The information source was the Orbitz, which is the automated budget system information, and the difficulty in trying to look at that and say whether there's money there or not money there is that what is in the Orbitz system was a number put into the budget system at a point in time, which at this point in time may or may not be truly reflective of reality in terms of what dollars are in those accounts. And some of those accounts just had empty limitation in the budget system, but not matched up to the accounting system. So the agency is trying to work through that. We don't believe that there is significant revenue just sitting around in the department's accounts. We did make some reductions, if you remember, during the interim for several of those accounts, the law enforcement medical liability account. Some of the money was that was expected not to be needed there was moved from there to the general fund during the interim as part of the budget reductions. That's one example. There were several others. And we do track, as the department rebalances, we do track where there's additional revenues coming in and out, and if there's money that can be used to free up general fund, the agency, as a general rule, will propose that to help rebalance their budget. So this is something that in this agency we look at continually. This will be a good exercise to try and update that information, but I guess the bottom line at this point is that we're still working on that and don't have a recommendation at this point for pulling any of that money out. Okay, at this time I'd like to turn to the two-page long document spreadsheet. And this summarizes the recommended budget adjustments that we are making. The first page summarizes what the agency has asked for in their reshoot, which is the equivalent of a middle of the biennium budget rebalance plan. So based on actions and caseload and revenue adjustments that have taken place since the governor's budget was put together, the department reshoots, rebalances, recasts the governor's budget to reflect those changes. And so what we've done is summarize on the first page what those items are, and then on the second page we get into more of what our recommendations are relative to those and other budget issues. So what I'd like to do with the committee's indulgence is go through these reshoot items, just present them very high level, and if you have questions on them, then the department would be able to help flesh out that information.
Just so that everyone understands, you may want to give the distinction between the reshoot and the rebalance.
The rebalance that was just completed by the subcommittee several weeks ago and moved forward in bill form addressed the 2001-03 biennium adjustments. So those adjustments that needed to be made to make their budget true up for the rest of this biennium. What this reshoot does is carry forward those adjustments that were made there into the 2003-05 budget period, because the governor's budget obviously didn't anticipate those adjustments. So it carries forward many of the actions that were included in that, and then makes additional adjustments that may have occurred since then. So some of these things will be repetitive of what you saw in the April and May budget rebalance that this subcommittee dealt with. But it will reflect the 2003-05 impact and not the 2001-03 impact. And I'll try to highlight as we go through where these things are carrying forward from those April rebalance actions. So the first issue on this page is, in fact, a new one that wasn't included in the budget rebalance plan. And this request would add medical payment recovery revenue staff. It's an increase in the department-wide support services budget that you see here. When the health services budget reshoot comes before you, what you will see there is a $4.5 million general fund revenue, or $4.5 million general fund savings from the revenue that's expected to be generated by these positions. So department-wide, there's a $4.5 million general fund savings. Again, you see the staffing and the cost of collection in this department's budget. Some of these positions are limited duration positions and have been collecting the revenue this biennium, so the idea is that those efforts would continue into the next biennium. Five of these would continue as limited duration, and 11 of them would be permanent full-time positions. The next line shows a $1.7 million general fund cost and some related federal funds expenditure limitation related to changes in the April rebalance plan and the shifting around of reorganization savings and then transferring those to the department-wide support services for reinvestment. $1.6 million of this amount is expected to be transferred to the information systems pieces. So, and I'll have a recommendation related to that later on. But basically, as the 0103 biennium was worked through and the agency identified those savings, this is what they would carry forward into 2003-2005 as a result of those adjustments. And there are savings in the various other clusters that you will see as we go through the reshoot for those clusters. The third line is the impact on department-wide support services for discontinuing the continuous system improvement unit. Department-wide, there's eight positions being eliminated. Six of them are in department-wide support services, and those savings are shown here. Two of those will show up in other clusters. The balance of the positions are being transferred to other units within the department. But this was a significant reduction in terms of the staffing that was assigned to that unit. The next line is just reflecting the impact on this unit for changes in what the senior and people with disabilities cluster did in terms of program adjustments related to the House Bill 5100 reductions. When the governor's budget was put together, it was built on a certain set of actions in the senior and people with disabilities cluster, which were later modified. And so as those were modified, and those will be showing up in the senior and people with disabilities budget, as those were modified, then there was an impact on department-wide support services. So this just reflects that impact, that change. The next line reflects actions that were taken in the April rebalance related to transferring some costs in and then transferring some costs out of this expenditures unit. There's no policy issues there that need to be addressed. The next line down is a $5.2 million general fund increase. And this request relates to the fact that in the governor's budget, as staffing is increased in the program areas, there is a need for increased rent costs particularly, but also other services and supplies costs related to that increased staffing. When the governor's budget was developed, this cost was not included in the governor's budget. The agency had requested it, but it was not funded in the governor's budget. So as we get to our recommendations, I have a recommendation relative to this as well. But that is what that increase shows. The next line relates to a Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act project related to the security and privacy rules.
Ms. Baker, I am very impressed.
That was hard. I practiced. What happened on the federal level was that the rules were not developed and promulgated as timely as was initially expected. And so the expenditures related to this project or meeting the federal requirements have been delayed. So this money was expected to be spent in the 2001-03 biennium. It won't be spent in the 2001-03 biennium, but still needs to be spent. And so we expect that those funds would revert in the agency's budget at biennium end for 0103, but they need the increased general fund appropriation and a related expenditure limitation in 0305 to complete those activities. So it's a timing issue, not a expansion of the project kind of issue. But it is an increased general fund expenditure in the 0305 budget. Then the next line is a really fun one here. And if I can find my page. As you'll remember, or maybe not, in the April rebalance, you approved adjustments that eliminated the department-wide support services prorate. And what this does is carry forward that impact into the 2003-2005 budget period. And the, And what's noteworthy about this is that you will see huge swings in the various clusters as a result of eliminating the prorate. There's almost $120 million of other funds expenditure limitation that comes out of the department-wide budget. So, in effect, this eliminates the double counting of those other funds that were paid previously into the department-wide support services budget. What it does is increase the general and federal fund in this budget and reduces those other funds. However, the complicating factor is because the governor's budget eliminated the general fund inflation cost increases in all of the cluster's budgets, the general fund that remained in those budgets to pay for the department-wide support services piece wasn't sufficient to cover that cost. And so what we have in this reshoot is a net $1.6 million general fund increase.
Question.
Representative Smith.
Is this a good, okay time to ask?
Mm-hmm.
Sheila, you said that there wasn't enough money to cover, so we asked for another $1.6 million. Say that again.
The effect of the governor's budget reductions in the clusters for the general fund inflation increase.
Right, because he didn't allow for inflation increases, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Left not enough general fund in the cluster budgets to be transferred to fully cover this adjustment. Without that general fund inflation reduction, this would have been a net zero general fund impact. But in effect, what this does is provide $1.6 million general fund in the reshoot to fill
what?
That impact of the reductions in the cluster budgets when that inflation was taken out. Part of that inflation would have gone to pay for department-wide support services expenditures.
Okay, so.
And it wasn't funded in the governor's budget.
I did. Follow up.
Okay. And those services are caseloads?
These services are all of the department-wide support services, so information technology, accounting, budgeting, the director's office itself, all of those pieces that used to be paid for with the prorate, we're in this budget adjustment setting up as general fund, other fund, and federal fund expenditures to more properly reflect what the source of that funding is. But again, because of the governor's budget reductions, there wasn't enough money to fully make that fund shift without a small additional general fund appropriation.
Thank you.
Any questions? Everybody understand what happened? Okay. Jean, do you understand what happened?
Oh, close enough. If there are any questions, I'd turn around.
Okay, so that summarizes then the reshoot request.
You know, I might say there's some other issues surrounding the complication of DHS's budget, and that's because we actually have done a lot of changes through the reorg,
mm-hmm.
and which has made some of the accounting issues somewhat of a nightmare.
Oh, I would think so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
trying to. I hope that by next session that all of those issues of where we won't have to address them next session, that we will have an accounting system that links with all of the other pieces in program, and so it'll be a lot clearer.
Yes.
Okay, if we go to page 2 of my legal-sized memo or legal-sized spreadsheet, then we get into the recommended adjustments for the budget after their reshoot request. The first line reflects the impact of the Attorney General rate reduction. The legislature reduced the Department of Justice budget, so the Attorney General rates are reduced from, I believe it was, $109 an hour to $98 an hour. So it's about a 10% reduction. So that's reflected in this budget. There were reductions in the Department of Administrative Services budget that are reflected here. And I will note that department-wide support services pays the Department of Administrative Services assessments for the department as a whole. So you won't see this adjustment as you get to the other clusters. You may see the Attorney General reduction, but not the Department of Administrative Services assessment. So the director's office pays the bill for the department.
It's ultimately that both, at some point, the department-wide services will be doing both the Attorney General as well as the Department of Administrative Services assessments.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure that consolidation of all the Attorney General expenditures is anticipated or not. Right now there's about three areas where there's Attorney General expenditures budgeted. The next section shows the additional adjustments that were either anticipated in the co-chair's budget or that our office is recommending. The first reflects the merit freeze adjustment, so the expectation that there would be no merit increases after July 1. The estimated impact of that is shown here. Then the next line is vacant position savings. The 35 positions that we're recommending be eliminated, those are shown here. I will note that a number of those were vacant unfunded positions, so you don't get any savings out of that, but you do get positions out of that. The next line shows information system savings. The co-chair's budget anticipated $2.1 million for the human services program area overall in information technology savings. What I'm recommending is something less than that. It's the $1.6 million that would have otherwise been available for information systems within the department. This is from the reinvestment funds, the 1.7 that was shown on the first page. I would recommend taking that $1.6 million towards the co-chair savings expectations. The impact of this, as I understand it, is that then the department would have otherwise expected to use this money to help bring all of its PCs, personal computers, up to standard.
That's all right. Rosie likes you, too.
I've got a tab running. that they would have otherwise brought some of their older machines up to standard. It's my understanding that they still have, for example, some 386s out in some of the program offices or various places in the department, and they would have brought everyone up to a minimum standard, but this will defer that until some undetermined time in the future.
Madam Chair.
Senator Courtney.
Thank you. And what is that impact on federal funds? What's happening there?
What I'm showing in the federal funds here is basically taking out almost all of the federal funds that were built into the reshoot request related to the $1.7 million from the reinvestment funds. So if you go back to the first page, the second item on that shows the $1.7 million general fund and then $4.5 million federal fund. So that was an estimate that if they spent that $1.7 million general fund, they would be able to leverage $4.5 million federal funds. And so with the information technology reduction that I'm recommending here, I'm taking out almost all of those federal funds.
Thank you.
So it's not money that they would otherwise get. Then the other co-chair specified reductions include eliminating 13 positions related to the Oregon Health Plan 2 waiver. These were positions they got during the interim and emergency board actions related to expansion of the Oregon Health Plan. The co-chair's budget anticipates taking those positions out. I will note that as decisions get made about the Oregon Health Plan and what it looks like moving forward, we will want to make sure that, you know, the staffing is tied to that as necessary to fully implement that plan. But at this point, because of the change in expectation regarding that waiver, those positions are coming out. Then the second adjustment there, this is the change in the Medicaid Management Information Service package. The expectation is that instead of using general fund as the state share of money, that the state will issue certificates of participation financing through the Department of Administrative Services. And you can see there I've added 7.4 million other funds here. That would be the certificates of participation financing proceeds. And then that would be used to pay the state share of the project, and the federal funds that were in the original package would continue in that package. So we've made no change in the federal funds. There is a net $1.3 million general fund remaining in the package after the shift of the cost to the certificates of participation, and that's to pay the debt service for the 03-05 biennium, because once we issue the certificates of participation, then we will be paying debt service on those. And this approach to use certificates of participation for an information technology project is consistent with some other budgets and projects that have been approved by the legislature in the past. One example is the Juvenile Justice Information System in the Oregon Youth Authority. That's how that project was financed. And so it's an acceptable mechanism for doing that. The positions that were requested in that package don't change. They're still funded. They'll just be funded with other funds and federal funds instead of general funds and federal funds. Then the third item the co-chairs anticipated was a reduction in continuous system improvement unit, and I've noted that those are included in the agency's reshoot adjustments. So now I get down to the other LFO recommended adjustments, what our office recommends. We recommend that you don't fund the additional $5.2 million general fund that was included in the agency reshoot for the centralized costs related to growth, position growth in the clusters. And we note that this was requested but not funded in the governor's budget. It wasn't identified as a hole that needed to be filled as we were developing the co-chair's budget. And it does make it more difficult for the agency to cover its rent costs to the extent that there are increased rent costs because you have more staffing and you need to find places to put those people, and perhaps in some instances you need to add on some additional square footage. I would also note that as the governor's budget was developed, the rent cost for inflation for non-state owned properties was limited to a certain inflation factor, and although the agency projects its cost to be higher than that inflation factor would provide funds to cover those costs, that additional money was not budgeted for either. So the agency will have a challenge in managing its rent budget even as is, but we still do not recommend that you fund this $5.2 million general fund.
And the federal funds in this category?
The federal funds are just administrative matching funds related to that for the most part.
What is the inflation rate on non-state-owned properties? Do you remember?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I believe it was about 5%, 5.3%.
Per year?
I would have to go back and look. what you have in the department, and I believe as part of the follow-up information, they provided a rent schedule based on some earlier questions. The issue you have is that even if the department isn't moving or expanding space, that when leases come up, if they've been long-term leases and they're renegotiated, in many cases the agency is looking at significantly higher rent costs to continue those leases.
I understand.
And renegotiate them. Mm-hmm. Then the second recommended adjustment there is one that only a budget person could love. In the agency request budget, the elimination of the departmental prorate included $35 of lottery funds based on a cost allocation to the gambling addiction program, basically.
$35.
Well, and we won't have $35 of lottery funds in the department-wide support services budget, so we just shift that number to other funds.
I was wondering if that was an error.
Well, there is a process of allocating the costs, and what showed up on the allocation was $35 of lottery funds.
Okay.
But
we're high rollers.
Madam Chair, couldn't we take that $35 and go buy lottery tickets and try and solve our budget problem based upon those winnings?
You know, it's such a huge long shot. I mean, that's a longer shot than what's going on in this building.
Then the final recommended adjustment there relates to, if you go back to your memo, relates to a proposed budget note. If you remember, the $1.7 million in reinvestment funds that was identified in the agency's reshoot, we're recommending you take $1.6 million out of that for the information system savings. That leaves about $151,000 of general fund that, again, the agency had savings in other areas to identify this and transfer it to the department. So there's $151,000 of available reinvestment funds, and we're recommending that those be used for a staffing study. The agency had, on several past instances, requested some funding for a staffing study, with the concept being that with reorganization and all of the changes in how the service delivery system looks and all of the organizational changes, that it would be useful to look at the staffing standards that the agency uses for program delivery. We would support that. We would also, by budget note, ask that the agency look at the impact of, analyze its supervisory to non-supervisory staff ratios, and there are some proponents of a 1-to-12 ratio as being a ideal ratio of supervisory to non-supervisory staff, and so we would suggest that the budget note ask the agency to identify what the impact of moving to that ratio would be. Now, because the department hadn't had time to really say what could you buy for this amount of money in terms of a staffing study, and it is less than was requested initially, we would suggest that the agency come back to the emergency board with its first budget rebalance plan to talk about what it is that they can do in the study and how they would do it and what the time frame would be. And we would expect that both Department of Administrative Services and our office would be involved in that, helping to decide what's going to be looked at and how it's going to be looked at and how they get this done. And then further, the budget note would ask the department that, to the extent feasible, that they use the results of the study to help prepare its next budget request, which the agency generally would be expected to get developed by spring of 2004. So that basically gives the agency less than a year to get something done. Or if it can't get something done in its budget request, then, of course, we can always look at that later. But ideally, there would be something that would be useful that it could use as it prepares its next budget request. And then we would ask that they come back to the next legislature and talk about what the study does and what's changed in the budget as a result. Now, there's two issues I want to underscore here. One is that I don't believe that there's a foregone conclusion one way or another that the agency needs more staff or less staff. I believe that by funding the study and having this budget note, that gets the legislature more information about whatever it is that can be looked at within the scope of this study, get more information about what the current ratios are, what the work delivery requirements are, and how the current staffing meets that need or needs to be enhanced or reduced. So that's the mindset in which I'm making this recommendation.
And just a brief comment. I know Senator Morse is very interested in having an analysis done of looking at the supervisory and the span of control with inside the agency. And I know that the agency is also, there has not been an analysis done in human services for probably a lot of years, and specifically when we moved from to the reorganization. I think it's timely that we then begin to have a look at this particular issue, and I, for one, support the recommendation, Senator Gordon.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. That $151,000 plus in general fund, is that, are we talking about a contract, or are we talking about work that would be done within the agency as part of its overall administrative responsibilities? I'm trying to get a handle on why.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, I don't know how much time the agency has had to kind of develop an idea of how they would approach that. I would say that to the extent that it's only done by the agency, then it may not be perceived as credible as if it was contracted out or other people were brought in. But there may be a mix and match of in-house and other experts that could be working on the study.
Question
is wondering if thought, thank you, Madam Chair, if thought has been given to, say, a university being asked to look at this issue. Is there a way to accomplish this without spending $150,000 in general fund is the question.
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, Jean Thorne, Director of the Department of Human Services. Frankly, I think $151,000 is not very much for and what needs to be done. And I think that certainly universities are a possibility. I agree. I mean, we've only really talked about this the last 24 hours, and so we haven't gone into any depth. I agree with the comment made about it being important that we not do it. And so I think the question will be, how can we stretch this money the furthest in order to review as much as is possible? And I'll just say I've been frustrated coming in because not only the reorganization, but also as we've moved along and caseloads have increased and sometimes we've gotten staff and sometimes we hadn't, it's hard for us to know anymore. And sometimes the complexity of the programs has increased without the staffing standards changing. We really do need to sit down and focus on where is it we most need to look at this, get a contractor in, whether it be a university or another type of entity, and see how can we stretch this to really focus on those areas that are most critical and of most concern.
Do you think maybe it might be possible also to match those dollars?
Yes, we do, and I believe, Madam Chair, I guess you don't have. Do you have?
The anticipation is that it would be matched up above where you see the reduction in federal funds related to the information systems transfer, and I said that eliminated most of the money with the reinvestment funds. What's left in federal fund match then is an expectation of that the 151 general fund would be matched with the same amount of federal funds.
Okay. Senator Gordon, can't be.
I think I've made the point. Everything has perspective, and when we've reduced
funds in other categories that have to do with people's services, seeing this amount of money, which, you know, you call a small amount. Well, it's a large amount, depending on what you want to spend it on. It's just troubling to me to see this, and I really hope that we look at some other ways to get the job done without having to contract for it.
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, we will look to see how we can do the most with the money that's available. I would just note that, and again, this is not assuming it goes that this arrives at one thing or another, but I do know as we've had experiences of increasing caseloads and not having the staff keep up with it, that affects clients as well because there's a further delay in them receiving services. So trying to better get the picture of what it should be in order to best serve clients given the circumstances, I would hope is a useful investment of money towards better serving clients as well.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would echo Gene's comments with respect to the dollar amount. If you put it in perspective of slightly in excess of 900 positions, that amount represents less than one position on a biannual basis. So, it's a very small amount, but for the satisfaction of us as policymakers to know from an outside perspective that, you know, we may need to staff up more. We don't know that.
Okay.
Or we may be able to consolidate and operate more efficiently. But utilizing outside resources sometimes is a huge asset because they tend to see things that us on the inside don't see. So I think it's a very reasonable and not a large amount of money from my perspective.
And as from your chair's perspective...
It's a lot of money, but for the job to be done.
From your chair's perspective, it's my hope that having this study done and having it done by an independent source to give some validity to some of the requests that is brought forth by the agency, and where we're not constantly here as policymakers listening to just anecdotes. I think that we have to look at, as policymakers, some refined information that assists us in making decisions and without having the suspicion there. And I know that I've talked to the agency and I've talked to legislative fiscal about the need to begin to look at, you call them time on task, but begin to really look at what is needed inside of the organization and inside of human services. And so I think this is a way for us to get there. And I think the cost is very reasonable if we can even get it at this cost. I know that some of those studies by some of the renowned national organizations aren't that inexpensive to come in to do the kinds of things that I think we would like to have as policymakers. So, Gene, do the best that you can within the limited dollars that are there.
Certainly will.
Moving on to the next budget note then. This budget note you saw in the Commission on Children and Families budget. This was one that was requested by Department of Administrative Services as they did a preliminary review of agencies' accounting and budget structures. They identified some agencies that they felt needed some additional work to better link those up. And so this budget note reflects the language and the interest in continuing work on that during the biennium. And then on the last page of the memo, we talk about performance measures. We attach the departmental performance measures. The directors or department-wide support services isn't the lead on any of those measures, but we did note that the activities of this department, of, co- of this unit, of course, support those other activities, and that internally, department-wide support services does have particular workload measures for its various activities, and they included that in the presentation information that you got during the budget discussions. But there will be a more substantive discussion of the departmental performance measures as we get into the various clusters budgets.
So we will revisit the performance measures as the agency.
So I was just going to add one or two more sentences. We have a total preliminary budget there recommended. There may be adjustments to that, as I noted earlier during when we had the discussion of one of those bills. There would be an adjustment for that bill. There may be other adjustments by the time we get to the final budget decision on this, but this does summarize where we are at this point on the department-wide support services budget.
So our action today that's required for this budget is that we're accepting your spreadsheet but subject to change. Is that the action that we're taking today?
A preliminary approval.
So we could approve the preliminary recommendation, which is subject to change. I'm just trying to get my verbiage correct. And we will need to have the third member, to either Bates or Miller.
While we're waiting for them, may I ask a question?
Sure, certainly.
What's the average square footage cost on one of our leases? And I know there's extreme variables statewide, and there's factors that are a mile long, but I'd just be interested in knowing what's the average that we lease a facility for?
We'll see how good he is.
Yeah.
Senator Winters, Representative Smith, you're right. It varies great. Oh, excuse me. For the record, my name is Clyde Psyche. I'm the Chief Administrative Officer for the department. Excuse me. Chair Winters, Representative Smith, we could probably run a statewide average for you, but you're absolutely right. It's really market-driven, and so it really truly depends on, for instance, we pay a lot more per square foot in places like Portland and Washington County as opposed to Ontario and other other areas of the state. And also the other issue is that whenever we get into a lease situation, typically we sign a lease for 10 or 15 years, and the escalators are kind of built in. So the other factor we have, which I think was mentioned earlier or referred to earlier, is that as we come out of a 15-year lease, typically we have a substantial increase because then we're paying market that, you know, we haven't had to pay for 10 or 15 years. I could probably get you a statewide average. I think maybe something that maybe more useful is, if you'd like, I could maybe have a statewide average but break it down by areas of the state and what the average cost per square foot is in certain geographic areas.
Follow-up question, Chair Winters.
Follow-up.
That is an unfair question. I'm hitting you with that. And I'm prepared to support the budget, but if I could get additional follow-up information and perhaps just break it down by region, just kind of what we're looking at.
Chair Winters and Representative Smith, we'll get that to you right away.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Morse, you might want to, because I know you've done a lot of research on this whole issue of the supervisory to staffing issue, and because I ask you to do that, and you've looked at not only the need for it, but I think you've also have contacted some national offices and what they do and how they can assist the state in our endeavor. I want to share that with members.
Yeah, there are numerous resources that are available. We've had discussions with Gary Weeks, and I'm sure that those discussions may have already happened within the department, and looking at how we can engage national firms to come in and help. In looking at the very brief summary that your department provided, Jean, it seemed to me that there were opportunities to look thoughtfully at how it is structured. But, you know, it's obvious to come to the conclusion for this body, there's only so far we can go and kind of set things in motion, and then we need to back out. And I think that's what we've appropriately done here. A 1-to-12 ratio is not an impossible ratio. And most of the department does not operate at a 12-to-1. It's more like a 7-to-1 based on what we have seen.
Mr. Chair and Senator Morris, I would just say, without kind of being able to have in front of me what each part is at, I do know from work I've done in government before that seems to have been my whole life. Many times it depends on the type of work that's being done and also whether the supervisor is also, in essence, carrying a workload him or herself as opposed to only supervising the work of others. But this will give us an opportunity to look at that as well as the staffing around our various programs and for caseload carrying staff.
Mm-hmm. One point that I wanted to make is that this issue was not done in isolation. The legislative branch has been working with the executive side of the aisle in looking at this particular thing, and I want to thank Senator Morris for his work on this issue. I guess we can't find members right now, so why don't we bring this back tomorrow and include it with other packages to vote on? And my apologies to individuals in the audience. This is a very hectic time for us in session. You probably know members are either in other committees or in other budget hearings, and we're kind of all over this building, but we will bring this back tomorrow for work session. And Ms. Baker, if there's no further business, no other direction for us for tomorrow?
This afternoon you should be getting the children, adults, and families information. So
good.
Keep an eye out.
With that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.